Hey now, welcome to the program. My name is Jim Rome. A very good Wednesday to you, and we start hour number two. A three-hour show. Great to have you here. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, as you know, Rocket can. Busy, busy day. Let's keep moving. If you're on hold, I'm going to get phone calls in a little bit later on. If you're not on hold, I do have a phone line open. This number works in the United States. It works in Canada. It is toll-free. It is 1-800-636-8686. I've been previewing the NFL draft. We're having prospects on, and then I've got guys who are already in the league. We are joined right now by a defensive tackle for the Minnesota Vikings. Last year for the Giants, he had 49 tackles, 3.5 sacks, 10 quarterback hits. He was the Giants' Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year nominee. He signed with Minnesota last month. He is the only member of the entire 2017 NFL draft class to start every game in the past four seasons. He was, on top of that, a two-time national champion at Alabama, a three-time Georgia State champion wrestler. He was the 55th pick overall in 2017. Dalvin Tomlinson is my guest. Dalvin, great to have you on. How are you?
It's pretty good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's pretty good to have you here. In fact, it's really good to have you here. Let me ask you, if we were to go back to free agency, it's a process that can be pretty exciting or it can be pretty stressful. How did you approach it, and what was the experience like for you?
It was pretty exciting for me. You know, it's the first time going to free agency, and you just sit there and pretty much wait in your free time to see what's going to happen.
All right, so the Minnesota Vikings made no secret of the fact that you were their number one priority. I'm curious, what kind of conversations did you have with them, and what was it about the Vikings that made you feel like that was the spot for you?
The Vikings have a great organization, and just talking to them about how excited they were to have me and what I can bring to the table to help them out in the upcoming seasons. And, I just felt super excited about the opportunity to be there with the players they have and everything. I just felt like it was the right fit.
Dalvin Tomlinson is my guest. Now, late in the season, they were having some trouble stopping the run. They allowed 199 yards to the Bears, then 264 yards to the Saints. So what's your plan when it comes to helping that team deal with the run?
You know, I'm just bring a physical aspect up front, and you have to be physical up front to help stop the run. So physicality is one of my strong suits, I feel like.
That is, and as good as you are at stopping the run, you can also get after the quarterback as well. And there aren't too many guys who can play on the interior and still get after the quarterback. So how do you explain your success in that area, and how much pride do you take in the fact that you are effective in both areas?
I take a lot of pride in it. and simply just because, you know, you have to be able to stop the run to get to the passer. Because if not, they're going to just continue to run the ball all day, so I pride myself in stopping the run, and also just, like you said, having a sneaky pass rush every here and there to get back to affect the quarterback. So I just pride myself in it.
Right. Dalvin Tomlinson joining us. You know, over the years when I talk to pass rushers, they talk about the fact that everybody always wants to talk about sacks, but that's not the only way to impact a passer. Like, for instance, how much of what you do is about collapsing the pocket and forcing the quarterback off his rhythm or into uncomfortable spots?
It's batting balls down, just knocking the offensive lineman into the quarterback's lap to get him uncomfortable with his throws throughout the game. All that's big on affecting quarterback throughout the game. And sometimes the batted ball impacts the quarterback more than a sack would.
Dalvin Tomlinson is joining us. Exactly. It's always about that sack stat, but there's so much more to it. Now, I did mention off the top, you're the only member of the 2017 draft class to start every game over the past four seasons. Of course, you know the old saying, right? Availability is the best ability. So what's it mean to have that reputation that your teammates know they can count on you every single week, pretty much regardless?
That's great to have that reputation because, you know, the goal is always to be healthy so you could go out there and give you all each and every week. And I didn't even know that stat. That's crazy. But, just have to take care of yourself and take care of your body because you never know how long you're going to be able to play. So you want to put yourself in the best position to play for as long as possible.
Right. I mean, some of that's luck, but a lot of that, most of that is taking care of yourself and taking care of your body. So how do you go about doing that? Like, what are the types of things that you do to take care of your body to make sure that you can play every single week?
Cold tub, contrast, cryo chambers, acupuncture, massages, things like that, stretching. All that goes into a daily routine when you're in an NFL, and you can't just slack off with it. You have to do it even though it may be days you don't feel like or you're super tired. You have to make sure you do those things.
Dalvin Tomlinson joining us. Now, this is also of note. You were 169-2. 169-2 is a high school wrestler, including three state championships in Georgia. The first loss you suffered was in your very first match. The other loss was when you hip-tossed a dude onto his neck. When you're that dominant at something, like, what was every match like for you? Were you ever concerned that you could lose?
Yes. I used to get butterflies before every single match, and wrestling, you know, you wrestle like 6-7 times a day sometimes. So it's just like, you know, you get those butterflies that many times a day. You just like that. You don't want to eat anything and things like that. And I used to just look at almost every single player, every single wrestler, just like the smallest details. Like if somebody has tape on their wrestling shoes, I'm like, oh, they're super good. Like it's going to be, if it's going to feel like a state championship match.
I mean, Dalvin, I can understand that approach, but since you mentioned the state championship match, is it true that you won a state championship match in 9 seconds? Nine?
Yes, so it was my senior year. I won in 9 seconds, my last match, actually. And I think it was a little bit faster, but they didn't want to give me 6-7 seconds, so they said nine.
Dude, was it really 6 seconds?
I would like to think so, but I'm satisfied with 9 seconds.
I got it. Dalvin Tomlinson joining us. You know, I had Osa Digizuba on the program yesterday, a defensive line draft prospect from UCLA. He also had a really successful high school wrestling career. We talked about the mindset that you need to develop to be successful in wrestling and that you're going to have that leverage and you have the use of your hands. Like, how much did it help you? And you know this physically, right? But from a mental standpoint, how much has wrestling helped you at this level?
I feel like in wrestling, it's the most mentally toughest sport it is, simply because there's no one to help you or back you up out there. It's like mano y mano. And you have to make things happen on your own. It's all on you. If you lose, it's on you. If you win, it's on you. And you can't tag somebody in to help you out. And then the training for it is nowhere near the easiest thing on the world. The condition is crazy.
Right. So are you an MMA guy? Do you like combat sports?
Oh, yeah, I like MMA. I try to watch it when I have some free time, but I'm always video gaming, so you got to make time for it.
You got to. Dalvin Tomlinson joining me for a few more moments. You also said that back in the day your wrestling coach was a dude in his 50s, shorter than you, maybe with a beer gut, but he could beat you in wrestling. Like, how did those matches go? What made that guy so good?
Just wisdom, I would say. Wisdom, technique, and just knowing exactly what you're doing at all times. Coach Doug Hutzler and Marty Hutzler, both the Hutzler brothers, pretty much hands down some of the best coaches I ever had in my life, on and off the field. And I'm pretty much the man I am today because of those two.
Because of those two. And then also, Dalvin, I would imagine, like, when you look at your family background, your father passed away when you were just five. Your mother passed away suddenly when you were in high school. And you've said that you've had aunts and cousins who stepped in as mother figures and uncles who were father figures. What did it mean to have that kind of support of your family through such painful, painful losses?
It means a lot, especially at a young age. You have a family to fall back on. Means everything, because when people go through losses of that significance through their life, you got to have someone you can grieve with and go to at all times to help you out and help you just continue to live the way that your loved one would want you to live. So having a great family that support to fall to meant everything for me.
And what about your mom? Like, for instance, what was your mom like? What were the types of things that she used to tell you, and what kind of an impact did she have on you?
My mom was my best friend. She had the greatest impact on me. She was a big video gamer. That's why I love video games now. She was always a person to put everyone before herself. And she was just selfless. And she was a great, loving woman, always laughing, always smiling. And, she just motivated me. She always made sure that academics came before sports, that she was a huge football fan. And she loved to watch me and my brother play sports. She was always at every football game, every wrestling match, and tracked me, all that stuff. And, she was a great, loving woman, and that's who I mold my life after today.
That is an awesome tribute. Dalvin Tomlinson joining me for a few more moments. I know academics were important because, as some people know, in addition to being recruited to Alabama, Harvard was also very interested in you. How did you go about deciding between Harvard and Alabama?
Like I said, we grew up based on academics. So used to always say when I was a kid, I'm going to Harvard, I'm going to get me a Harvard degree. In high school, I just got an offer from Harvard, and they were like, yeah, it's going to be mainly academics. And that was amazing for me just to know that my academic side was acknowledged just as strongly as my athletic side. And, I always said I wanted to go get a Harvard degree and things. So after football, after NFL, I had to go back and get one.
That would be an awesome thing. So finally, then, what about the football experience at Alabama? That's as good as it gets. You're a two-time national champion. As you look back, what kind of memories do you have, and what was that experience like?
It was amazing. Coach Saban cares about his players. The number one thing he always wants everyone is to graduate. And that's why I have so much more respect for Coach Saban, because he always, if you were late to a class, you might end up having a random meeting with Coach Saban in his office, which is scary. And he'd be like, why are you late to class, or why are these grades dropping, or you might need help with more study hall with this class and this and that, so you could be on track to graduate early, if not on time, and things like that. And, he cares about you off the field also, and wants your full potential in life, not just football.
Did you ever get that? Did anybody ever hit you with, yo, D, coach wants to see you in his office?
Yeah, I got called to his office a couple times, but it always wasn't like academic. It may be like a leadership thing or something. But whenever a random phone number calls you and say you have a meeting with Coach Saban at like noon or something like that, your heart drops a little bit.
I was going to say, man, you're a pretty competent guy and a pretty confident guy. Was that scary when that call comes in?
Most definitely. You never know what to expect.
Dalvin Tomlinson joining us, getting a new opportunity with the Minnesota Vikings. I know they're thrilled to have him. Dalvin, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for that visit. Good luck with that.
All right, thank you.
Great to talk to you. Dalvin Tomlinson, he's had an amazing football life already. So he was a Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year nominee with the Giants, and the Vikings knew exactly who they wanted. They knew who they wanted. They knew where they needed help, and they knew who to go after, and they get their guy. And he gets a great opportunity there. All right, good conversation. It's been a really good Wednesday already. Looking ahead, Shaka Smart is going to join me at 10:40. He goes to Marquette, returning to the state of Wisconsin. So talk about new opportunity. Shaka Smart's got one. I've got a beef segment, but not coming up until hour number 3. So if that's what you want to participate in, know that that's coming at 11:20. Masters getting underway this week. Back in its rightful spot. It's a little bit weird, right? They had it in November, and now it's back where it's supposed to be. And since it's back where it's supposed to be, Elk is back where he is supposed to be as part of the Jim Rohn podcast. He will make his triumphant appearance, or a triumphant return and appearance. And that's the fourth year in a row he's done that. Episode 169 of the original Side Hustle. Elk joining me after the program. Still ahead, I want to give you my thoughts on the Masters. I want to talk about Joel Embiid and how well he's playing. As we go to break, this says, Romy, happy World Health Day. After a challenging year, I think it's time to improve my quality life. Regards, smokers switching from lights to ultra-light cigarettes. Ashley in Nebraska. War drunk people lighting a heater backwards.
War lady clones.
Oh, Ashley, going in on cigarette smokers. And old Rome applauding her for it. Good job, Ashley. War Ashley in Nebraska. Dear Jim, anyone coming for Newport Beach better reevaluate where they live. You kooks only wish you can bask in the glory of a glorious Southern California beach town. Signed, Ryan in Newport Beach. War, I grew here, you flew here. He's right. I'll give an example. When I lived in the 818, I grew up in Los Angeles. And I grew up on the west side, then my family moved to the valley. And I spent most of my life in the valley, came down to San Diego, worked in San Diego, met my future wife, Janet, in San Diego. We moved back to LA and back to the valley. And then at one point, we decided that we would move south to Orange County because Janet's family was in Long Beach, LBC. So I got it in my mind that, oh, we're going to live in Newport Beach. If we're leaving L.A., I'm going to find me some water now. We're going to Newport Beach. And Janet said, yeah, let's look around Newport Beach. And we drive around. I fall in love with everything I see. Like, everything this guy's saying is true. Everything Ryan in Newport Beach is saying about Newport Beach is true. So, like, literally everything I see, I love and I want to live and I want to buy. Janet says, you know, I heard about this place over in Irvine. Let's go take a look. We're not 5 feet inside this gate. And Janet's like, this is where we're going to live. I'm like, yeah, how about, do I have a say in this? I think I do. And she laid out an argument that I could not refute. So I did not end up in Newport Beach. I ended up in Irvine, which is awesome, but different. But what this guy says about Newport Beach is accurate. Now, that doesn't mean it's perfect. It's a lot of attitude and a lot of jacked up grills from malpractice, reconstructive surgery suits. A lot of that, for sure. But in short, Newport Beach is awesome. But so is Laguna Beach. And so is San Clemente. And so is Dana Point. All these beach towns here in SoCal are amazing. When we return, man, save it for the beef. We have a beef segment coming up. Not next, but an hour from right now. Shaka Smart coming up at 10:40. Got a quick question for you. Maybe it's a question you've heard before. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so incredible? Well, let me start with the fact that it's produced by a family business, a family that stands by quality and produces the best beef jerky in the world. And if you ask me, that's a fact. That's not even an opinion or a take, a fact. You don't want to be fooled by all the other brands. All beef jerky is not one and the same. I hear that sometimes. Yo, Rome, why are you always going on about Old Trapper? Isn't all beef jerky the same? No, not at all. You want to make sure you choose Old Trapper. You can actually see the quality right through their iconic clear view packages. That is not a coincidence. They set it up so you can see exactly what you're buying. And then when you eat it, every bite of Old Trapper is tender and it's never tough because they use only the best ingredients. From their lean strips of beef, seasoned with top quality spices, to their real wood-fired smoke, Old Trapper just delivers quality in every single bite, and it comes in four amazing flavors. Make Old Trapper part of your weekly grocery list, and then keep a good supply on hand for you and your family both. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
This weekend on CBS, the big events continue. The best golfers in the world head to Augusta National in hopes of winning the coveted green jacket. A tradition unlike any other, the Masters. Coverage getting underway Saturday at 3 Eastern, continuing on Sunday at 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific on CBS. Shaka Smart's coming up next segment. All right, so coming into the MLB season, there was a lot of attention, a lot of focus on the National League. Understandably so. Dodgers are the defending champs. The Padres have Fernando Tatis Jr. They added two more elite arms and then received something which sounds like pretty good news yesterday on the shoulder of Tatis. Then you've got all that talent in the NL East. So much going on in the National League, it's easy to forget about the American League. But yesterday, the Yankees did their best to make sure that you start to pay some attention. They started things off with the acquisition of Rougned Odor from the Rangers. Smart move, because it gave the Yankees some left-handed pop and it gave them a little more versatility. Oh, and the Rangers are going to pay a fat chunk of his salary. So not only does he have one of the best names in baseball, he, of course, was also right in the middle of one of the most iconic moments of this century when he drilled Jose Bautista with the greatest punch in baseball history.
Set by Diekman in the pitch, and Smoke hits a ground ball left side. Beltre picks to his left, throws to second for one, Rugi to first, and Bautista goes after him, and Rugi pushes Bautista, and they're in a fight at second base. Rugi threw a couple of punches at Bautista, and the dugouts have emptied. This is a real Donnybrook. This is not just players standing around. There's a big flesh pile out in short right field. Hard to see what's going on in there, as there's a bit of a pile out in right.
It's pretty ugly in the middle there. We can't see it, but everybody's out there on the field, and the punches are still being thrown.
A Donnybrook and a flesh pile. You know, I really wish I could have played the video. I had to go with some stills because, like, if you think that I'm using a relatively minor transaction as an excuse to try to reset that fight, you're damn right I am. Because that was not just the greatest punch in baseball history. That was one of the greatest punches in the history of punches in any combat sport. Like, there are boxers, good boxers, who go their entire careers without landing a shot to somebody's face as solidly as Odor landed that shot. This guy's got nearly 150 home runs from the left side in his career, but I'm way more concerned, way more afraid of the power in his right. And yesterday was not only about Odor arriving in New York, because it was also about the Yankees flexing their muscles on the field as well. Last night, they took on Baltimore, and they beat the O's 7-2. But it wasn't even about the final score. It was about how they did it, how they got there. There was Jay Bruce doing this in the second.
Start off against Jay Bruce.
High fly ball, deep right field. Santander back on the track. He's at the wall. See ya! Home run, Bruce! That's why they got him. It's 1-0 Yankees.
Right. Flex job. And then there was Aaron Judge. This is why they have this guy in the eighth.
Judge with a couple of hits and four at bats. That one's drilled deep to left field. There it goes! See ya! A long home run for Aaron Judge. A three-run shot. The Yankees break it open. They lead 7-0.
That one was measured at a reported 432 feet, but that felt a lot longer to me. A lot longer. And in between those bombs, you had Gerrit Cole on the mound. Just doing work. And I mean work. 7 innings, 4 hits, 13 strikeouts. It was his 11th straight start with at least 7 Ks. Last night was his 25th game of at least 10 strikeouts since the start of 2019. The next guy up is in second with 16. That's how far he is from everybody else when it comes to striking guys out. And last night was just another night of comical numbers. I mean, truthfully, the numbers do not even do this guy justice at this point. Gerrit Cole, on a good day, is filthy. Cole, at his best, is unfair. Like, there is a level of nastiness that is just absurd. The Talkin' Yanks Twitter account compiled the highlight reel, and it really is something else.
Swing and a miss. Swing and a miss. Swing and a miss. And he goes around. In 98, Cisco goes down on strikes. Swing and a miss. And the pitch. Strike three, Santander. Down looking. Swing and a miss.
Tex, you might be going on the IL.
Cisco down on strikes. 2-2. Strike three. Strikeout number 10 for Cole. Swing and a miss. Mancini could not hold up.
Dirty.
Number 11. 3-2. Strike three. Strikeout.
This guy's so filthy. Like, you know he's got it working when he's got that iconic K-strut going. And he had that going a number of times last night. The finest version came in the top of the third on an 0-2 pitch with two outs. You got to roll this.
And the pitch. Strike three, Santander.
I'm not sure what's better, his pitch or his reaction. Because the pitch hit triple digits on the gun, but the reaction was so much better. This guy was walking off the mound before the ump even reacted. Cole was practically halfway to the dugout before the ball even hit the catcher's glove. You know how great shooters know they've hit a shot the moment the ball leaves their hand? In this case, Cole knew it was a strike the moment the ball left his hand. Not only did he know it was a strike, he knew there was nothing the batter could do about it. And it didn't feel like he was really bearing down on that pitch either. Like, that's triple digits. If somebody hit that a few years ago, I would leave the show with it. And this guy's just casually dropping that in the third inning of a game in April and even didn't even look like he was breaking a sweat doing it. This guy didn't have to rear back and fire some heat. Man, just natural, smooth and easy. Made it look normal, made it look natural, which he does with a bunch of his pitches. The same guy who can drop triple digits heat can also drop an 84-mile-per-hour knuckle curve from the same exact motion, and you can't tell it's coming. Good luck trying to catch up with that or to slow down to his pitches. And if you do, he's going to hit you with some high 80s slide pieces. Like the word masterpiece gets thrown around quite a bit, but that was an actual masterpiece. That was a master class in pitching, a free lesson for anybody who wanted to pay attention to it. But the problem is, it's not a great lesson because pretty much nobody can do what Cole does. And they definitely can't make it look as easy as he makes it look. Like, that's a totally different level of mastery. And it's an awesome thing to see. I'm not saying the Yankees are a legitimate threat to the Dodgers just yet. Hell, the AL champs are still in their own division. But when you see Cole bringing heat like that, and you see Judge murdering the baseball the way he did, and then you add in my guy Odor, I can see why Yankee fan is fired up. I mean, like, I'm not even a Yankee fan. Far from it. And I'm pretty fired up just watching that. Really impressive. All right, when we come back, talk some Marquette basketball. Shaka Smart is going to join me. That's next. Looking ahead to the rest of the day, I've got a beef segment coming up in hour three. Is there something that's kind of pissing you off a little bit? I'm here for it. I've got the segment for it. It is the beef segment, 11:20. And as a reminder, the Master is getting underway, so that means I will have Steve Elkington for episode 169 of the Jim Rome Podcast. Elk is going to break down the Masters like he does every year at this time. And every hour at this time, I have a sports update. Here is the latest. Here is Rich Ackerman.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Rolling through a good Wednesday. Welcome back. Great to have you here. All right. If you're on hold, you want to stay there. As promised, we are joined right now by the new head basketball coach at Marquette. He was named Golden Eagles head coach on March 26th. He has led teams to 8 of the last 10 NCAA tournaments. He led VCU to the Final Four in 2011, led teams to 3 conference tournament championships. Marquette is coming off a 13-14 season. They were 8-11 in the Big East. We are joined by their new head coach, Shaka Smart. Shaka, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Jim.
It's good to have you back, Shaka. Thanks so much. Now, you grew up in Wisconsin, just south of Madison. So, first off, what does it mean to be back in the state and leading a program with the history of Marquette?
It's great. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Marquette has such a rich tradition, and it's really cool to be at a place that's just infatuated with basketball 365 days a year. So, looking forward to rolling up our sleeves and getting to work.
All right, so to that point, like, it'd be pretty easy to see this as a homecoming, but at the same time, how much of that decision then was about returning to the state where you grew up as opposed to how much of it is about the opportunity itself at Marquette?
Really more about the opportunity. I would have gone to Marquette wherever it was. Certainly, the best thing about coming to this region of the country is getting a chance to be close to my mom, who lives in Madison. But to be honest with you, is really about coming to Marquette. The alignment here from the president on down as it relates to commitment to basketball and what goes into winning. And again, the fact that, you know, basketball is really the front porch of the university and very, very central to the success of the university.
We're talking to Shaka Smart. You know, Shaka, you were born in the year that Marquette won the national championship, and you grew up watching Marquette games. What do you remember about those days of the program and those teams?
Well, I remember a lot of exciting teams and a lot of exciting players. I remember, you know, just watching those games as a young guy, getting to know college basketball, and I didn't really understand much that went into, you know, just the competitive level that there is here. But I just remember being excited about watching teams put up a lot of points here at Marquette.
talking to Shaka Smart. You know, it seems to me when you look at a program or you evaluate a job, there are things that you can see, you know, things like the facilities or the number of season ticket holders, the resources for the program. But you've talked about the feeling that you had when you started to think about and research Marquette and that there are certain things that you just can't quantify. How would you describe that feeling?
You're exactly right, Jim. When I first got here a little over a week ago, I was able to go into the arena, Fiserv Forum, and you're right. You can't quantify that. You can't really put a number on what it feels like to go in that special of a place. And then, again, just the reception and the way that people feel and demonstrate their passion for this program, something you can't really put a number on, but it's fun to be around because there's kind of a common feeling of, okay, we're going to go try to do this.
We're talking to Shaka Smart at Marquette. You know, the story goes to back in 2014. They pursued you, but you ultimately decided to stay at VCU. What made you feel then like this was the right time for you and your family now as opposed to then?
Yeah, different time, Jim. A lot of different circumstances. There was kind of an erroneous report at that time that I was actually in Milwaukee. I remember being in my kitchen in Richmond, Virginia, and a bunch of people calling me saying, hey, are you in Milwaukee? But to be honest with you, one of my favorite players of all time was a junior at VCU at that time. There was no way I was leaving him going into his senior year. So sometimes it's about situational factors. It's about timing. And I just felt like this was a great time for my family and I to come up here.
We're talking to Shaka Smart. I can respect that. You know, timing is everything. Now, you're coming off a year at Texas, which included winning the Big 12 tournament. You were ranked as high as number 4 in the country. Knowing that, it seems to me it would have to be a pretty special thing to get you to leave. Why was the time right, and was that tough to leave?
It's always tough to leave just because of relationships. Texas is a phenomenal place, as you know, Jim, and there's a lot of terrific things about that university, that fan base. But, you know, when I started kind of adding everything up and my wife and I discussed the opportunity, we just felt like it was something that was a slam dunk for us. So it ended up actually not being that tough of a decision because we looked at the potential of what could occur here. And you never know. There's no crystal ball on anything, but we really liked that opportunity here at Marquette.
So, Shaka, what's that feel like? When you talk about what can occur here, what kind of a ceiling are we talking about? Or maybe is there not one? What can occur there if all goes the way you want it to go?
Well, you know, the interesting thing, Jim, is at this day and age of college basketball, there is so much in flux. There is so much up in the air with rule changes, with name, image, and likeness, with transfer changes, you know, with some of the things that have adjusted with COVID. But I do feel like, you know, in a program like this, if you look at what Tom Crean did, Buzz Williams had a heck of a run with phenomenal teams. I think you can recruit really talented young men. I think you can get them to buy into understanding how special this program is to this place and buying to being a part of that. And then it's about, you know, making sure that you take advantage of that on the court. And you got to have a little bit of luck as well, but I really think this is a place where you can do something special.
Shaka Smart's joining us. He's at Marquette now. Like, Shaka, you have always struck me as somebody who's looking to learn and grow and evolve, and the game obviously is changing so much, as you mentioned. For instance, when you think back to when you first stepped on the court in Austin, how much has the game changed, and then how much have you changed as a coach, even in recent years?
It's changed a lot, Jim. You know, one thing that, it's funny, we pressed every possession at VCU, and everyone asks me all the time, you know, why don't you go back to doing that? And there's a few reasons why, but one of them is the game's officiated differently. You can't trap and have the physicality out in the open floor nearly as much as you could 10 or 15 years ago. You certainly can be physical around the basket. They allow a lot of that. But when you're out on the floor, it's different. So certainly the game's evolved in that way. I think the game has gotten a little bit smaller, too, from the standpoint of positionally. There's no power forwards that look like Karl Malone anymore. You know, there's a lot of guys, 6'6", 6'7", maybe 200 pounds, really, really versatile, can shoot the ball, can put the ball on the floor. And so I think adjusting with that and understanding that what other teams are going to have and how best you can counteract that is what you have to do as a coach.
We're talking to Shaka Smart. So if the game has changed and the way the game is officiated has changed and the players have changed, Shaka, what about the culture itself and the culture you're looking to instill? For instance, the culture that you instilled at VCU versus Texas, has that changed? And what kind of a culture are you looking to instill now at Marquette?
That has changed, Jim, for sure. Now, there's certain foundational elements that my mom taught me when I was a young kid that I will always believe in. Things like appreciation, enthusiasm, having a passion for what you're doing, embracing a common goal. So those parts of culture will never change for me. But certainly some of the details, I've evolved a lot with just my thinking on how best to relate to these young guys. When I was at Texas, there was a coach, an AAU coach, that said something to me that always stuck with me. He said, you can't expect to recruit this high of a level of players and not expect them to have individual goals beyond college. And I thought he was exactly right. So basketball is a fascinating game because it's an interplay between a consummate team sport, but then also one where there's a ton of individual considerations, obviously from the NBA on down.
Wow, that's interesting, right? Like, how do you balance that?
Well, very carefully, man. I mean, you have to balance it through relationships. And I think if you can get guys to understand that really buying into and supporting and promoting team success throughout the season, and particularly late in the season, is going to boost their opportunities individually beyond college, then you have a chance to kind of do both. But it's tough because we live in a time where, and this is part of my cultural emphasis as well here, it's so easy to get outside the moment, but it's so important to be lost in the present. And anything special that you do in sports happens in the present. And unfortunately, there's a lot of factors, a lot of things, social media, otherwise, that can pull guys' minds into the past or future.
Right, more than ever before. And I don't want to lose track of this, Shaka. When you listed things that were important to you and to instilling this culture, you mentioned enthusiasm. Like, that doesn't seem like that big of a thing, right? On the surface, it doesn't seem that important. How important is enthusiasm? And then how contagious can it be if the right guy or two have it?
Incredibly important, Jim. I mean, I wish that you and I could put a number on it. I tried a couple times at VCU to measure it in different ways, but I really think if we were just going to guesstimate, I think it's worth between 8 and 10 points in a basketball game, just to having the enthusiasm advantage. But if you think about it just in life, the more enthusiastic person has such an advantage compared to whoever else it is. The most enthusiastic player I ever coached was a young man by the name of Briante Weber at VCU. He had no scholarship offers coming out of high school. He was 6'2", 150 pounds. His enthusiasm took him all the way to the NBA for a few years, and that was always a lesson to me, like, wow, like just the energy and the passion that someone has, what it can do.
It's like, where did that come from? Was he hardwired for it? Did he manufacture that, create that, figure that out? Like, why was he so enthusiastic?
Well, I do think that all of us have a type. And, you know, Deion Sanders had a quote back when he was playing. He said, we're unlimited within our limits. And so I do think, like, this kid, for example, his type was one of pretty high energy. But I think for all of us, you, me, whoever, within that type, if we can get to that far right end of where we want to be and these qualities that we know affect winning and affect success, that's how we're going to be, you know, be happiest and most successful.
So, Shaka, I know you didn't put a name on it, but was he the player that you stayed at VCU for in 2014?
He was one of them. There was two, him and a kid by the name of Travion Graham. Both those guys were finishing their junior year in 2014, and I knew that just getting a chance to be around. Those guys taught me more than I taught them. So, you know, sometimes as a coach, and I know fans don't really look at it this way, but sometimes, like, you want to be around guys, not even so much the impact you're going to have on them, but the way that they make you feel every day, just coming to work and being around them and getting a chance to share. So, absolutely, that was a special group.
That's really interesting. Both NBA guys, too. So, like, what else, aside from enthusiasm and attitude, what else did you learn from those two?
Well, those guys were polar opposites in terms of their personalities, but the one thing that they had in common that, and I think Jim is really, really missing amongst a lot of players, and I'm not trying to be critical, but if you watch basketball, a lot of guys miss this, and Baylor really had it, and it's a big part of why they won. I know it's easy to say in retrospect, but I would have said this 3 months ago, is a level of seriousness about what the heck you're doing out there. Like, of course we're trying to have fun. Of course, you know, it's a game. But, man, if it comes down to me honoring this detail a little bit more than you, having that seriousness and intentionality, those two kids at VCU had it. The Baylor team, almost all those guys being in the same league as them, watching them, they had it. You could see it in warm-ups. And you knew in warm-ups, like, these guys are not messing around right now. These guys are here to get something done. And again, kind of like enthusiasm, I think that gives you a big edge.
I think that's such a great point, Shock. And really quickly, to that point, though, I watched Baylor, and it seems to me like, right, these guys ain't playing. They ain't playing. But, man, they still play with joy, though, right? They're still happy. They're still having fun. They do both extremely well.
Absolutely. But the key, Jim, and again, this is, I think for everything in life, this is the key, is that they were able to lose themselves in the present moment. And when you are lost in the present, when I say lost, I mean you lose track of all that BS, all that stuff that really doesn't matter, but that sometimes our minds get caught up in, sometimes social media feeds into. When you lose that stuff and just completely get obsessed with, I'm right here with my teammates, enjoying this, going after it, trying to compete with these dudes, that's where it's at. And that's where you can have both the seriousness and the great enjoyment for being in that time.
Man, that point right there, Shock, I could talk to you for hours about that point that you just made. I'm so glad you made that. Marquette's got a new head coach. It is Shaka Smart. They're coming off a year where they were 13-14, but he is back home in state. Shaka, great to have you on the program. Really appreciate the energy, and it's good to have you on this show once again. Shaka, thanks so much.
No, I'm a big fan of yours, man. Anytime you call, I'm definitely coming on, so thank you for having me.
I'm going to take you up on that, Coach. You know that, Shaka. How do you not hire that guy with that energy and that enthusiasm and that personality? Hour number three when we come back.